always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
At the end of 2025, every American will see a tax increase because more than $4 trillion worth of taxes will sunset December 31st, 2025. That includes the doubling of the child tax credit, which was $2,000, will be slashed into half to $1,000. The larger standard deduction, which the majority of Americans use when they file their taxes, will be more than cut in half. And the small business rate will approach over 40% after this sunset. So it's quite disturbing that you have the president doubling down once again that he will allow the Trump tax cuts to expire.
4:29 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show, and that is the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Jason Smith, of course, here from Missouri. On the line with us is Jonathan Williams. He's the executive vice president at ALEC, and he has written an article for the Daily Caller here about those threats by Joe Biden to raise taxes. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thanks, Chris. As always, greetings from the land of make-believe out here, but it was very good to hear that comment from Chairman Jason Smith there, because he hits the nail on the head. This is one of the very biggest issues that we face right now. It's great to have leaders like him raising awareness around it.
You know, before we get into your article, I want to talk a little bit about Congressman Smith's bill that was passed in the House that would cut business taxes, would offer tax credits. It seems to be kind of dead on arrival in the Senate. Senator Crapo is not too keen on this deal. What's your thoughts on it, and do you think it has a chance this this congressional session?
Well, I mean, in a Senate run by Chuck Schumer right now, as we know, I mean, it's what very many good ideas go to die, unfortunately, in the Senate. And so I think it's very unlikely that the Senate is going to that up or any kind of tax cuts up right now because of the governing majority and the progressives who truly feel like Americans need to be taxed even more than we already are right now. I mean, it's obviously a very different philosophy from Chairman Smith and the House side and Speaker Mike Johnson. And you know, certainly I think what needs to happen for America going forward with the upcoming, I think, really existential debate around our economy, the Trump tax cuts, and what that will mean for all of us in the months and years ahead.
Speaking of Jonathan Williams of the American Legislative Exchange Council, he's the chief economist and executive VP there for policy. Also, he and his colleague Lee Shulk have a brand new article, The Daily Caller, dailycaller.com. Biden's pledge to let Trump tax cuts die has stirred up a hornet's nest. Jonathan, I don't know that most Americans, hardworking, middle-class, blue-collar Americans, understand how devastating the expiration of the Trump tax cuts is going to be. I believe study after study, analysis after analysis that you all have done have proven that these tax cuts were a boon, not for wealthy Americans, but for the folks I just mentioned. I mean, despite the Biden's pledges not to tax anybody who's making over $400,000 or under, that's just not true, is it? This is going to dramatically disadvantage and affect middle America and small business owners, isn't it?
Well, hey, Tim, and yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, essentially the entire individual side of our tax code is up for renewal and up for debate and on the ballot this fall when we think about it, because almost everything across the board when it comes to small business income taxes, personal income tax rates, so many of those things that Chairman Smith was just talking about, the double standard deduction, child care tax credit, you get on the list, including the hated alternative minimum tax. Remember that thing, the AMT, that we always complained about? America Americans didn't know whether they're going to be hit by it or not until after they filed. That was one of the great things of the Trump tax cuts. It doesn't get nearly enough attention. Is that more or less went away as a problem for middle income earners because of that? And so, yes, I mean, this is the big debate right now. You remember, I remember when this first passed, you and I were working on it, Tim, and mm-hmm. you know, we had that press release coming out from then Speaker Nancy Pelosi, or Leader Nancy Pelosi, saying this was just the tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, and it wouldn't do anything for our economy. We'd lose all this revenue. And of course, now with that in the rearview mirror, we know all of that was just a falsehood. It was gaslighting the American public. We know that the economy boomed, and we saw that historic economic growth. We actually saw revenue growth way above what those expectations showed. And of course, we saw it in our pocketbooks. The vast majority of Americans saw big tax cuts. And actually, this is one thing that totally gets ignored as well, is the Trump tax cuts actually made the tax code more progressive, not less, by cutting taxes for working families and actually having individuals at the top end do better, so they pay more of the total tax burden. So that's kind of an interesting one to shove in the face of your liberal friend that may be talking to you about this just being for millionaires and billionaires.
Jonathan, we've been hearing the liberals decrying trickle-down economics ever since the first term of Ronald Reagan, and their argument has never really made a lot of sense to me. They say our argument that wealth trickles down from the wealthy people down to everyone else, and everyone else prospers. They'll make that argument for the middle class because they'll say they spend that money for gas and for food and other necessities, but the trickle-down economics doesn't work for wealthy people. It just only works for middle and lower class people. Have you ever found that argument kind of strange too?
Well, it's a strange one because it's essentially, you know, to your point, they believe in this Keynesianism of big government, right? And essentially, they believe in trickle-down government. And we know that doesn't work. We know it doesn't work at the federal level. We know it doesn't work in the big government states. And so, yes, I mean, I think that philosophy really doesn't hold water whatsoever, because when you look at the actual, you know, outcomes of these policies that may be considered, you know, Reaganomics or, you know, Laffer curve economics, anything that's supply side trickle down, they like to use it as a pejorative, but actually, you know, businesses don't pay taxes, people pay taxes. So when businesses pay less, the laws of economics don't go away, right? I mean, we pay less in the cost of goods, we pay less in lots of other things, and to better take home pay at the same time. It's not a coincidence now, if tax burdens have gone up during the Biden administration, that adds to this inflationary pressure. I mean, one of the reasons why inflation was held low is we saw those supply side changes, of course, that added to productivity in the United States, but we also saw people with more take-home pay and less burden going to the government as well.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, I learned today that our very clever friends over at Americans for Prosperity actually were able to snag the domain Bidenomics.com because the White House wasn't smart enough to reserve it at GoDaddy for themselves. And if you go to Bidenomics.com, Jonathan, it talks about the reality of Bidenomics, which I know you have analyzed many times. You basically, imply in your new article at Daily Caller that, you know, Bidenomics would be, you know, raising taxes. And we can look back over the last 3.5 years. And Jonathan, hasn't Bidenomics been an absolute failure? As much as the White House wants to pretend that the economy is roaring and that inflation is just imaginary and transitory and that wages are making up for all this ground, you just suggested they're not. I mean, Bidenomics is something that I doubt President Biden is going to mention by name in the upcoming debate, and it's not something that the White House is going to run on, right? And White Houses always want to run on their economic record, but this economic record is one of absolute failure, isn't it?
Well, it sure is. And, you know, it's funny with all the multiple trillions of dollars that the federal government spent during the Biden administration, they couldn't buy the $10 web domain to get Bidenomics.com, right? That is a little bit ironic. But when you look at it, you know, this is very difficult for them to defend the record of the so-called Bidenomics of higher taxes and more government and record inflation. When you look at the actuality of it, I mean, Ronald Reagan coined it. I mean, when he was running for president, you know, the famous line of, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago, right? It's a pretty clear, based on the actual data, that now because of this just ravaged inflationary effects we have seen, Americans' take-home pay is less than it was when President Joe Biden took office. And so you can only put so much lipstick on a pig, gentlemen, and it's still a pig. This is a bad economic record, and this is, I think, one of the real reasons why the Biden administration would love to change the subject whenever it comes up with the economy. In fact, when their press secretary was getting grilled over this new ALEC letter talking about the need to extend the tax cuts, the Trump tax cuts, you know, they were asked, well, didn't President Biden have the pledge not to raise taxes on Americans over 400,000 of income? And aren't you also for allowing these tax cuts to expire for all Americans? And they didn't know how to reconcile that. They said, yes, of course, we want to keep our pledge. And of course, we're going to also let the Trump tax cuts for everyone expire. So they're in a really tough position right now. They're really hypocritical on this. And I think most Americans see through it.
Speaking with Jonathan Williams, Executive Vice President at ALEC. Jonathan, U.S. producer prices in May fell more than expected, the biggest drop in 7 months. Recently, new jobless claims across the country hit a 9-month high. Earlier, we were hearing that economists and experts were saying there were going to be 2 or 3 cuts in the rate, the Fed rate. Now we're hearing maybe 1 or maybe none at all. What does your crystal ball say, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, I think they keep backpedaling, right? You remember how it was supposed to be 4 or 5 rate cuts earlier on this year throughout the course of the year, and these inflationary pressures continue to be high. I mean, prices are sticky down on the downward, right? I mean, we know this to be true, especially as we continue to pump more government inflation fuel on the fire of that inflation problem that was already there. And so it's going to be very difficult for the Fed to do this dance. They'd be under a really exorbitant amount of pressure here between now and the election to cut rates in order to kind of juice the economy. But these are still very difficult fundamentals to navigate. And the Fed's boxed in. It's obviously a, you know, allegedly independent agency. But, you know, Chairman Powell's going to be under a ton of pressure to give the White House some relief on this. Obviously, the only question, if he does that, rates go down, that does really run the risk of higher inflation for a longer period of time, or even more concerningly, gentlemen, is the stagflation, of course, with the classic definition, not enough economic growth, slow growth with inflation. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about several times on this show is just watch those revisions to the government numbers. Mm-hmm. I think something like that over the last 10 months, we've seen these, you know, promising top line numbers, whether it's jobs, whether it's GDP, whether it's unemployment, and that gets all the attention. And then several weeks or a month or two later, when they do the revisions, it's been being revised in a not very positive direction. That gets put on page, you know, A19 of the New York Times instead of the front page. Now, this is something that's been going on. It can't be a coincidence if it's happened this many times, nearly every month over the last year.
You know, and Jonathan, to follow up on that, I think I noticed the latest revision was another downward revision for Q1 Q1 GDP, and that revision was down to 1.3% growth. I mean, that's below Barack Obama's new normal of 2%, which Donald Trump completely blew out of the water with, you know, massive growth during the 4 years he was in. So, Jonathan, here we are. You know, this is not the beginning of the first term of Joe Biden. We're near the end of the first term. So after 3.5 years, Bidenomics, Bidenflation, it's making things worse, not better in the country, right? I mean, we can't sustain this nation, especially with our illegal immigration problem, something else I know ALEC is focused on, with 1.3% quarterly growth, can we?
Well, this is something that's a major, major problem. And regardless of the next president, they need to focus on growth for America going forward, right? And 1.6 was the original. It went down to 1.3 for that GDP number. That was bad enough at 1.6, but being revised down to 1.3 is anemic when inflation continues to be, you know, 3 or above. And, you know, this is something that is probably even worse than that top line number suggests. One of my friends, Brian Westbury, a good economist out there, has suggested that his estimates show that at least, or at least in the vicinity of 50% of GDP growth that we're currently showing across America is attributable to government spending. So therefore, it's actually not organic growth. This is just redistributing our tax money into the government coffers, and they call it growth because it shows up in the GDP reports. That's one of the reasons I'm not a huge fan in looking at the broad GDP numbers. So as anemic as GDP is right now, the reality is even worse because it's really government spending propping up that. That's why when Americans say we don't feel there's an economic recovery, we're worse off than we were at the start of the Biden administration because of inflation. It's because a lot of these government numbers are being fudged just because of the pure definition of things like GDP and how they're calculated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, the Democrats were crowing last week because of the job number that was unexpectedly higher than was predicted. But I know you look at those numbers, and I'm hearing that a lot of those jobs were part-time and other transitory-type jobs. What do your analysis say?
Well, yes, that's right. I mean, it was a huge driver of that was the part-time jobs that added to that number. So, you know, this is not as good as the White House is claiming it to be. The other thing to watch out for, similar to the GDP numbers, is how many of those jobs out there are government jobs, right? We've seen huge growth in federal government workforce. Of course, there was a huge debate around adding another 87,000 new IRS agents. Certainly, that affects numbers. And then certainly the state and local government growth with all those Biden bucks sloshing around state budgets, as we've seen, whether it's Medicaid expansion or whether it's the big government states in California and New York on hiring sprees. But this is another thing that's really important to parse out to say, you know, what are these actually private sector full-time jobs versus either temporary, to your point, Chris, or government jobs that are really clouding the numbers once again.
Excellent. Jonathan, what new publications, efforts, missions is Alec working on at alec.org that you'd like to direct our listeners to before we let you go for the weekend?
Well, we got a ton of things in the works, as always, as you know, gentlemen. I mean, this letter that we released in the Daily Caller piece that we delivered, of course, to Chairman Smith, you know, calling for this permanent extension of the Trump tax cuts, you know, that's something that's going to be an ongoing project. We have something like 24 Missouri legislators that have already signed that letter. That's going to continue throughout the summer. We have about 95 members of the current Congress, as you know, who are ALEC alumni members like Chairman Smith. That's going to continue to be a big effort. We'll have our brand new Rich States, Poor States hard copies out in several weeks at our ALEC annual meeting in Denver, Colorado. So we want to be on the lookout for that. And then we have back to school seasons right several months away. As much as we hate to think about it that way, we're going to be releasing our new Education Freedom Report Card to detail all of those huge school choice and education victories with parental rights across the states that we're seeing with our Education Freedom Alliance. It's going to be an incredible report now that we have 12 universal school choice states in America. So be on the outlook for that, as well as our energy affordability index and all the inflation and what that's meant for energy prices. So lots more than that. Those are a few of the top line things that our great policy team at ALEC is in the midst of right now.
Lots of great stuff.
We've been speaking with Jonathan Williams, Executive Vice President at ALEC. You can reach him on X at Tax Economist, and also look him up, Jonathan Williams at ALEC. .org. Let's see the website.
ALEC.org.
ALEC.org. Okay, yeah. I got it correct. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend and happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you to you as well, both of you. Happy weekend to everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.